Welcome.
Well, once again, everybody, and thank you for joining me here on this Thursday, September 14th edition of Bang the Book Radio. My name is Adam Burke, your host for the next probably hour and a half-ish, hour and 20 minutes or so, as we go over all kinds of things in the world of sports from a betting focus. I like to call this our Thursday meeting show, I should say. Two professional handicappers join us. The first is Brad Powers from BradPowersSports.com. The second is Ralph Michaels from WagerTalk.com. We're going to talk college football and the NFL here on today's show. Lots of things to discuss with that. Obviously, week three of the college football season, now just a couple days away. Week two of the NFL season begins tonight. I guess we can consider tonight's college football game between New Mexico and Boise State part of week three. So we will be talking about that game here on today's show. But a couple of things before we get into that. Over at bangthebook.com, lots of great content. Please head over to the website. Check it all out. We've got a new NHL writer, Parker Michaels, that's doing some great stuff for us from a team preview standpoint. NFL power ratings are up there from Danny Vorgs. He went 5-0 last week. My college football power ratings, along with some other college football content, up over there at the website as well. Still churning out game previews. We've previewed every NFL game here for week two. I think about 20 or so college football games for week three. So we got lots of stuff over there for you to check out, read through, before you do lock in your selections here for this week. Speaking of selections, if you want to join our Bang the Book contest, we got plenty of those going on. Daily Streaker, monthly pick of the day, top monthly win percentage, top ROI, top number of units won. Cash prizes available for these. Just sign up over at bangthebook.com. We send you a newsletter every day that keeps you informed on what's going on with our new content. But that's all that you're going to get for signing up. We won't spam you. We won't send you a bunch of offers or anything like that. Just sign up, check out that newsletter, and then get involved in those contests. Finally, I mention this on every show. I got to do it again. It's critically important to have as many sports books at your disposal as possible. If you don't have an account over at DSI Sportsbook, sign up using the promo code BTB and the number 25. Good for a $25 free bet just for signing up. 100% deposit match bonus for the sportsbook when you decide to add some money over there. 100% deposit match bonus for the live casino. If you decide to play craps, roulette, blackjack, video slots, whatever you want to do. But a $25 free bet and a 200% deposit bonus, low rollover on that. You can't beat it over at DSI Sportsbook. All right, let's bring on today's first guest. That is Mr. Brad Powers from BradPowersSports.com. Bradley, how are you today, brother?
Excellent. Couldn't be better on this fine Thursday morning here in beautiful Las Vegas.
All right, man, we got a ton of stuff to get to here today. I know I sent you a little bit of an outline for the show, and there are lots of talking points, lots of games, lots of things to discuss. Let's go ahead and jump right in here, and I want to continue the theme that we've talked about throughout the week in terms of looking at overreaction and overadjustment in the college football betting market. There are very clearly some games that fall under that umbrella here this week.
Oh, there's no question. I mean, we'll see. I mean, look, the data points aren't quite there yet for a lot of teams. But, I mean, if you're looking at the over-adjustment game of the week for me is probably compared to where it used to be in the regular season, probably be Duke-Baylor. I mean, 2 weeks ago, this line's probably pick 'em. And now all of a sudden, Duke off two very impressive performances and Baylor off of two ridiculously poor performances against the likes of Liberty and UTSA. All of a sudden, within, you know, it's week three, and we've already seen probably this line move two touchdowns and with just two games of data points. So that by far is the biggest one. If you're looking for some other ones, I think Oklahoma State is getting a little too much love as far as the data points go in the marketplace. I mean, they've only beaten Tulsa and South Alabama, and I think that there's a little bit of line inflation with their particular game against Pittsburgh.
Yeah, those are the two that we've kind of keyed in on here throughout the week. And I'll ask you this, Brad. I mean, from a power rating standpoint, you look at that Baylor-Duke game and you say, okay, I have to take this. My numbers are telling me to take this. Is that the case, though? I mean, do you feel like you do have to take this game strictly because of what we've seen, you know, in the marketplace over the last 2 weeks? Or are you just not touching this Baylor team right now?
I'm not gonna touch Baylor. I know the gentleman that you're gonna have on after me is gonna take Baylor. I like the fact that they're making a quarterback switch. Brad Powers the better. We'll probably have a ticket on Baylor because I gotta trust my power rankings. Brad Powers the handicapper, knowing full well that people don't want to get a Baylor pick. I know they want winners, but you gotta also think about the negative feedback you could get if Baylor goes out there and gets absolutely crushed by Duke. Brad Bowers, the handicapper, will not be giving out Baylor, but he'll probably have a small ticket on the Baylor Bears. Look, I'm high on Duke. I mean, I thought I was much higher on Duke in the marketplace than anyone last week. I mean, that was one of the few four or five games where my power rankings had a 3-point difference with the Vegas line. I thought last week's game should have had Duke favored over Northwestern. Obviously, that was one game where my particular power rankings proved to be correct. But even with my power rankings being higher on Duke last week than the marketplace and me adjusting accordingly there, I still can't get this number anywhere near 14 from a pure power rankings perspective. I can get it to maybe 11, 11 and a half, but not the 14. So, yeah, pure power ratings, Baylor's the pick, and I'll bet it. But Brad Bowers won't be giving that out as a VIP selection this week.
Well, that's what I love about this show is that we look back at that Duke-Northwestern game, and you're talking about how you were higher on Duke. You thought Duke should have been favored. I had another handicapper on earlier in the week. I believe it was Sports Cheetah that mentioned this, and I could be wrong, so if I'm misparaphrasing here, I apologize. But he looked at it as an indictment of Northwestern more so than Duke being a pretty good team. So that's what I like about this show is that we get those different perspectives. We get, you know, we've got guys that have a lot of success doing this. They go about it in different ways for the most part and have different opinions. But yet, ultimately, the end goal is always the same.
No question. And on Sports Cheetah's behalf, yeah, very much an indictment also on Northwestern, how poorly they played the first 2 weeks of the season against Nevada and Duke. I have some money on a Northwestern over 7 win total ticket, and that one might be heading to the fireplace here pretty soon. But with that being said, and I know I'm going off on a little bit of a tangent here on Northwestern, they looked very awful at the beginning of last season, losing to Western Michigan and an FCS opponent and having to turn around and get to a bowl game. So don't automatically throw, and that's, I'll bring it to an overall point. Don't throw everyone in the trash here after just a pair of games. I mean, I'll take it to a bigger team last year. Oklahoma, you know, got blown out by Ohio State and Houston the first 3 games of the season. They went on to win their last 10 games of the season. So be very leery, even though we got an extra data point compared to what we had a week ago. Still, you know, don't be overreacting in the marketplace, especially if you think you had a really good beat on a team in the preseason, the field, just because maybe they had a tough couple of hard luck losses. Don't be throwing them in the trash and over-adjusting your power rating.
There's one more team I want to touch on here, and I want to touch on this team because you may hear them in passing on another show. My guess is that you won't hear any other show out there in the industry dwell on this team. That is New Mexico State. Huge win last week in the Rio Grande rivalry game against New Mexico. They're catching 7 here this week against Troy. But, Brad, I got to say, the biggest mover this past week for me in my power ratings was to move New Mexico State up.
Yeah, I moved them up 1.5. I had them as plays from a pure power ratings aspect each of the last 2 weeks. And let me break it down. I overlooked New Mexico State. When I was looking at teams in the spring, I mean, they've had return experience before. I was just like, yeah, well, whatever, throw them in the trash. You know, Doug Martin, their head coach, you know, has been there a while. I mean, I like Doug Martin. I think he's done some good things there, but they just can't get over the hump. Now, what I did was I let all my, you know, my spring power ratings sit and simmer for a couple months. I kind of tried to relax and enjoy life. But when I came back in late July, early August, and re-examined New Mexico State, there wasn't a team, at least out of the 50 or 60 teams I re-examined, that I power rated more up from my spring than any other team that I did out of 50 or 60 teams. There was just something that after going through and reading about how the JUCOs were going to come along there, I really started buying it, and I upgraded them a couple points in my power rings, which is very uncommon for me to do after spring is all over with, maybe a half-point adjustment, a point adjustment. But they were like 2.5-point adjustment that I put up on them in early August. And it's come to fruition as far as them. Easy cover against Arizona State. Money was completely on them against New Mexico. They're up 30-5, almost blow the lead. So that's a little bit of a concern, the fact that you could almost blow a 25-point lead in the second half. But yeah, I got them relatively pretty high. I had them, you know, like 6th or 7th in the Sun Belt, which is probably way higher than a lot of people had coming into the preseason there at the end of summer. And right now, I got from a 0 to 100, I got their power rating at about 58.5. I got them up 2.5 points after the first 2 games.
And that's the big thing is, you know, reading through and recognizing that there are some of these teams that are really, really buried down there that, you know, people just overlook, that people don't think about. And that is a team, you know, maybe this isn't sustainable. Maybe they don't continue this. Maybe, you know, the market will catch on, the value will be extracted. And certainly from the line move that we're seeing on this game, looks like the market's going against New Mexico State here this week, because the public is not driving any sort of line movement on a Troy New Mexico State game. And it's been pretty steady Troy money here for what's actually kind of a tough travel spot for them going way out there to New Mexico. So, you know, we'll see what happens here this week, but those are the things that you do want to isolate out there as a bettor and as a handicapper is, you know, everyone's paying attention to LSU and Mississippi State this week. Everyone's paying attention to Clemson and Louisville. Everyone's paying attention to, you know, the big name household teams. But if you dig deep enough, you can find those values in the Sun Belt, in Conference USA, the lower tier of the MAC. That's where there's money to be made.
There's no doubt. If you're looking for the softer lines, the softer market, it's in the MAC, it's in the Sun Belt, it's in the lower level conferences. No question about it, particularly from a side aspect. Now, I think the overall totals market's pretty soft across the board, at least until we get to the halfway point of the season. But, yeah, I mean, if you want to consistently beat and beat it for multiple weeks, like say you just want to ride a team for multiple weeks in a row before, you know, everyone catches up, the only conferences that you're going to find that possible are the Group of Fives, particularly the Conference USA's, the MACs, and the Sun Belts.
All right, well, let's talk about one of those Group of Fives here, because there's one game tonight, New Mexico and Boise State. You and I were talking a little bit here before we started recording. We're trying to figure out what the status is of Brett Rypien. Right now it looks like he's questionable, but the line is coming down, which would imply specifically at Pinnacle that Brett Rypien's probably not going to play in this game. He's got a shoulder injury or a concussion, one of the two. We're not quite sure as of now, but it's a short week, quick turnaround. Not a big surprise that he's probably not going to play here tonight. New Mexico's catching 14.5 pretty much across the market. Like I said, there's a 14 at Pinnacle. There's 15.5 at Bovada, which is a more public book. So it looks like we may have a little bit of a sharp versus public split here on this game.
Yeah, and it's going to be the rare time where I might be on the public. I think there's an overreaction of Brett Rypien being out. Yeah, he had solid numbers his last 2 years, but I mean, if you're following along in these games, he was yanked in the Troy game. Cozart came on, and the offense got a little bit sparked. He gets hurt in the Washington State game, and I know Cozart had a ridiculous interception at the end of that game in the fourth quarter that cost him. But other than that, I mean, if you look at the pure stats, Cozart's, you know, fared well and has moved the offense better than Rypien has. So, I mean, if the market's going to downgrade Boise State 3 points, I'll be more than happy to take those 3 points, because I wouldn't downgrade Boise State hardly at all, maybe a point at most with Cozart playing instead of Rypien in this game. I mean, I guess the market hates Boise State, you know, giving up a 3-touchdown lead on the road last week, played multiple overtimes. It's a short week. You're prepping for the option. Boise State's 1-10 against option teams the last 4 years. So that, huge negatives, but what have you seen from New Mexico that wants you to buy them? I mean, last week, they're playing with revenge against your rival. It's not like they'd beaten New Mexico State 10 years in a row and overlooked their little brother. They were lost to them last year. You're on your home field. You're a touchdown favorite. The lines and the markets were against them last week, and yet you're down 30-5. I mean, you just happen to rally in the fourth quarter to make the game look a little bit more respectable. I guess I'm not totally understanding the line movement, because we saw late day game day steam on Boise State last week against Washington State, but yet all last week we saw, you know, steam against New Mexico. It's completely flipped in this, and I get it that the situation's not good for Boise State, but from a pure power ratings aspect, and Boise State did, the one cover they do have against the option teams in the last 5 years was against New Mexico last year, and it was 49-7. Good night, Irene, in like the third quarter of that game. So I'm going to have a slight play on Boise State minus the points here and be along with Joe Public in this game.
Well, and there's another factor here, because yesterday it came to light that Bob Davie is under investigation for mistreatment of players down there at New Mexico. So, you know, what does this mean to you from a handicapping standpoint? I mean, is this something that could serve as a distraction here for the players and the head coach in this spot?
Yeah, I'd say so. And I'm glad you brought that up, because after I got done talking, I'm like, wow, I forgot to totally say the Bob Davie story. Yeah, it's a distraction. Does it really affect my power ratings and overall thoughts on the game? Maybe not. And you don't know how many players it is. Maybe it's a couple players. Maybe it's a couple past players that were complaining about it. I mean, in today's day and age, everyone, you know, bitches and moans. It seems about anything in life. So I need a little bit more information as far as what's going on there. And maybe that's why, I mean, New Mexico is 0-2 against the number. They've kind of underperformed a little bit coming off a nice bowl season. We'll see. To me, it's not a major mover, but it's something you got to factor in, at least moving forward, if they continue to underachieve as far as against the Vegas expectations. But I watched the bowl game. They looked pretty happy, you know, putting Bob Davey on their shoulders when they won the bowl game last year. I didn't cover against UTSA. I wasn't happy about that, a backdoor cover. But, I mean, the players seemed to buy in. And I'll be honest, I was not a big Bob Davey fan, me being a Notre Dame season ticket holder. But I can tell you, he's done a wonderful job there. So, well, we'll see how this turns out.
One last thing I want to ask you about here with regards to this game is that, you know, a lot of people have this perception of Boise playing on the blue turf, and this is something that public bettors can fall victim to here tonight with a standalone game, is that while this Boise State team is still solid, it's not the team that it once was. It's certainly not the team it was under Chris Peterson, and this is a team that went 0-6 against the number at home last year. So in looking at this line, Brandon, looking at where it came out, where it's kind of at this point in time, do you feel like odds makers have properly adjusted to, you know, Boise State's home field advantage maybe not being as strong as it had been in the past?
Oh, I think they have. I think it's gotten out there, at least in the marketplace, from the pro bettors that, you know, and look, why was Boise State, look, Chris Peterson was a great coach, you know, maybe a top five coach in the country. I know Harsin gets a lot of flack, but okay, he's not Chris Peterson. So is not 120 other coaches in the country. So it's not like he's a bad coach. And, you know, it's tough laying spread. Say you're a little bit down from where you were when Kellen Moore was your quarterback. I mean, it's tough covering spreads when you're laying 28, 35, 38, and you're just not quite there. Now I'm starting to see them start to lay some reasonable numbers. And it started with the Troy game at home. I mean, that was a push depending on what you got in the marketplace for that particular game against a good Troy team. I mean, to put it in perspective, last year they're laying 11 to Washington State at home. This year they open up the season against Troy, they're laying 11. I know you got different factors, Boise State being a little less experienced. But, you know, again, I mean, if you look at what they were 2 years ago against New Mexico, they're laying 31 at home. And now a couple years later, they're laying 14.5. So I think there's been a major adjustment here in the last year or so. Maybe it still was some line inflation last year, the fact that they were 0-6 against, you know, as a home favorite. But I definitely think that point spread premium you're playing on the blue turf, that you're not paying that price anymore.
All right, let's move to a game here on Friday night. And this is a tough one to really have a whole lot of excitement and interest in. But we had a listener request about it, so we're going to go ahead and talk about this one here. Between UMass and Temple, Temple now laying 14.5 out there in the market. UMass off to an 0-3 start. It is not a good look for them. They are an independent team without a conference affiliation. Temple, of course, in the AAC, new head coach Jeff Collins. Hasn't been a good look for Temple here. They got blown out by your Fighting Irish. They played a very close game against Villanova, who's actually a really good FCS team. I don't think people realize how good Villanova's been at that level. But for UMass here, that loss at home to Hawaii in week one, not a good look. Gave Coastal Carolina their first win as an FBS member. Scored 7 points against a really, really banged up Old Dominion team last week. Are you seeing any line value in this game, Brad?
I will not have a ticket in this game. It's tough to buy either team because they're combined 0-5 against the number already, and it hasn't been a good look. You know, I know Villanova is a good FCS team, but they lost their, like, 30-year veteran head coach. So I had some questions and concerns about Villanova. The market, I bet Temple last week in that game. I got a good number, like 6 or 7, and I think the line went crazy, way up to double digits in that one. But obviously, on the right side of the line move, but it doesn't matter. Losing ticket's a losing ticket. And that one was a nip and tuck game where it was like 16-13. They didn't look good against Notre Dame. I mean, Notre Dame can't – look, I'm not comparing Temple to Georgia, but vast difference. Temple getting, you know, bull rushed for over 400 rushing yards against Notre Dame. Notre Dame couldn't do anything offensively last week. So I got my concerns about this Temple defense and just how good they are. Massachusetts, you broke it down about as best as you could. They blew a late lead at home against Hawaii. I wonder if that's had a negative impact on them. Go down to Coastal Carolina. The market loved Massachusetts in that game. They flipped from dog to favorite. They didn't get the job done there. Horrible performance last week. You know, when you put the old gun to the head of Brad Powers, he's going to be on the take, then lay it. So, especially getting more than 14 and getting more than two touchdowns. Give me Massachusetts plus the 14.5, but we're talking pizza money, like Little Caesars, $5 hot and ready pizza money on this game.
Well, and what's really challenging about this one, I mean, I do have this number right on 14, so I won't have a play in this one at all. And what's really challenging, though, about it is, yes, UMass is really bad, and we knew that coming into the season. This is hardly a big surprise that they're not very good. But at the same time, you know, can you trust a Temple team that has looked very bad in 2 weeks to go out and blow somebody out? I mean, what sort of number does Temple have to put up in this game to win by 14 or 14.5, you know, given some of the problems that they already have? I think that's the bigger question overall.
Yeah, and I haven't seen enough juice out of their offense. Keep in mind that they lost their all-time leading passer, lost a good solid running back. Jeff Collins isn't known as an offensive guy. He's more of a defensive-minded head coach. But I've seen inconsistencies. I mean, the 7 points that Massachusetts put up last week, I mean, I was expecting a higher scoring game. We saw it from the Hawaii game. We saw it in the Coastal Carolina game. That was kind of a head-scratcher for me against, like you said, an Old Dominion team that was a little banged up. To only score 7, that gives me great pause. If I'd have seen them score in the 20s last week, I would have a stronger play on Massachusetts because I think they'd have a lot more of ability to put enough points, and I wouldn't think Temple would have enough, you know, offensive juice in them to cover a number that big. But, man, I mean, if Old Dominion's holding Massachusetts to 7, I mean, Temple still, I think, has got some guys on defense, and at least they have a defensive guy at the top spot as far as head coach to be able to shut them down. Again, 0-5 against the number combined. I haven't seen enough from either team to say, hey, I'm immediately going to buy this team in this particular game.
Well, and for anybody that is scrambling to look for reasons to play this game, because there are only 3 games on Friday, and we know that people want action, they're going to play these standalone or these small card games. Don't consider the fact that Temple plays at South Florida next week. It's not a look ahead spot because when you haven't played well in 2 weeks, you're not looking ahead to anything. So that's not a factor that I would consider here in this game if you are looking to play this one. But I think that Brad and I gave a pretty good perspective here on this one. And really, it does look like you almost kind of have to go UMass or nothing here, just because if Temple goes out there and scores 35 and finds a way to cover, I mean, the total on this game is 52. So, you know, if Temple finds a way to get into the 30s and covers, good for them. Congratulations. But you got to see it to believe it, I think, in this instance. So that is the way that I would probably wind up approaching that game. We talked a little bit about this one earlier on in the week, but I want to touch on it here again, circle back to it. UCLA and Memphis. UCLA, a 3-point favorite out there in the market. 5 dimes, the first ones to go below that key number of 3 down to 2.5. Had a listener reach out to me and say, hey, UCLA is only -3.5 this week. That's easy money, right? Not so fast, my friend. I think this is a really, really intriguing game for so many different reasons.
Yeah, I mean, this is one where I think you stay far, far away. I mean, look, if UCLA goes in there and wins by 2-3 touchdowns, I'm sure Joe Public bettors going to say, that's easy. I mean, this whole betting thing, this is a pretty easy. I mean, UCLA favored by 3 against Memphis? Are you kidding me? Yeah, again, like you said, in the league course, so I'm not going to have one. I know guys that think Memphis just win this game straight up. I've seen guys have their biggest bets of the week on Memphis. I've seen guys that I would say are more of the square side of things as far as handicappers love UCLA minus the points. I'm going to pass and stay out. I can tell you this. My power rankings say take UCLA. I don't know if they're high enough on Memphis. Again, I haven't seen enough of a data point on Memphis. Game last week canceled. Their game one was played in the remnants of Hurricane Harvey, so that wasn't a good look for them in that particular game where they didn't get the cover against Louisiana Monroe. I was on the show 2 weeks ago. I was adamant. I am buying UCLA. They'll get the job done against Texas A&M. Not so fast. didn't get the job done in the first 3 quarters of that game. And I worry about a banged-up defense that was missing several starters last week. It's given up 332 rushing yards per game, even almost gave up 300 rushing yards to Hawaii last week. I don't know if I can trust the UCLA defense. I know Josh Rosen's looked great, especially in the last, you know, 5-6 quarters of play. He's been unstoppable. But you're telling me that a 9 a.m. start time traveling to the Liberty Bowl, very unique setting for UCLA. Memphis has had 2 weeks to prep for the game. I'm just not going to play it. if you're going to go, you know, put the gun to the head and say forced lean, just from a pure power ratings aspect, give me UCLA. I'll be Joe Public. But is Brad Powers going to have a bet on the game? No, he's not. That one, that's the fishy line of the week. And if you want to do this for a living, you got to understand that.
Couple points I want to make here, and I don't want to spend too much time on this game because we did talk about it a little bit earlier in the week, but this profiles is a game where you're going to see a lot of points, 72.5 on the total, a lot of public money, probably going to commit on the over for this game given, you know, what Memphis did last year and then what UCLA has done so far this year. But again, that 9 a.m. kickoff element, and it's still an 11 a.m. local time game for Memphis. So, you know, it's not like they're going to be ready to go and chomping at the bit. I mean, it may take some time to get into rhythm and get some points in this game, which leads me to my second factor is I talked about this on Monday, but I'll mention it here again on the show for anybody that didn't catch Monday's show or anybody that only listens on Thursdays. Memphis, as you mentioned, played that game in the remnants of Hurricane Harvey. They could not throw a forward pass in that game. Riley Ferguson was 10 of 25, I think, for like 90-something yards. Memphis has got a really good passing game, but they haven't had the chance to use it in game conditions yet, and that's something that concerns me a little bit here. It's not going to push me to take UCLA by any means. It is going to keep me off of taking Memphis. But that's another consideration here for the total is that, you know, they ran the ball very, very well against Louisiana Monroe. Couldn't throw it. I have to see them throw the ball in a game, show some timing. This is one where maybe I look to make a second half play, you know, if Memphis does look a little bit sluggish or if the game gets off to some kind of interesting start.
Yeah, and I think you hit the nail on the head. In-game live running for me in this particular game. I want to see how UCLA comes out. And I'm glad you touched on it. If you're wanting and expecting a ton of points, I got to say, just one of my pillars of totals handicapping, look, it's easy to play these night games. These late start times, they don't affect college kids. I just take it back to how I was in college. Late nights were nothing to me. But what did affect me, and I'm a morning person, unbelievably early morning person, but what did affect me back in my college days was, you know, was I 100% at 9 a.m. in the morning? No, I wasn't. So when you have a high total on a very early start time, and the earliest start time that you, a type of start time that UCLA maybe only plays once every couple years, I'd be very worried about, you know, unloading on an over 73.
All right, let's go to game 133-134 on the card, Middle Tennessee and Minnesota. This one's a listener request. I'm glad we get the chance to talk about this game. I was probably going to put it on the docket here for today anyway, but I'm glad that listeners are taking interest because this is one of those games where you can probably find some sort of edge out there. Minnesota, a 9-point favorite at the sharper books, a 10-point favorite at some of the other books, yet Bovada also sitting there at 9, which is kind of perplexing to me a little bit. This is a tough game to figure out because Middle Tennessee looked awful against Vanderbilt, went on the road as a team not getting a whole lot of love against Syracuse last week, beat the Orange. Minnesota looked very bad against Buffalo in their first game. Go out west, blow out Oregon State. I don't know who these two teams are right now.
Yeah, I'll say this. Middle Tennessee's gotten steamed each of the last 2 weeks, so I'm anxious to see where the line goes as we get closer to the game time. A lot of factors for me. Look, they got steamed against Vanderbilt. That steam money was absolutely dead wrong. I thought it was a bad matchup. Middle Tennessee's a finesse-type team, likes to throw it, run a lot of plays. You know, I worry about some of the protection issues against a more physical team, but last week they also got steamed against Syracuse, and that proved to be absolutely correct. They pulled the outright upset, but again, Syracuse plays a very similar style to what Middle Tennessee plays. Middle Tennessee last year went on the road in SEC play against Missouri, won the game outright, but again, Missouri, similar style, finesse offense. Minnesota, under P.J. Fleck, not so much, especially if you look at their performance last week on the road against Oregon State. And look, Oregon State's looked like, you know, dog crap all year long now for three games. But 48-14 on the road when Minnesota was getting steamed against them. The public liked Minnesota last week. The pros didn't. I'm anxious to see if this comes down. And then there's the other factor. Brent Stockstill's not 100% from Tennessee, and he means so much to him. He's one of those quarterbacks out there. You take him out, and he's a 7-point type of guy. So I'm very anxious. I would prefer Stockstill to play less than 100% because that'll keep the lot, and that'll keep the Middle Tennessee money, you know, thinking more positive. I'm going to, no matter what happens here, unless the line goes up, I'm going to have a Minnesota ticket in my back pocket. I'm a big P.J. Fleck fan. I think it's a bad spot for Middle Tennessee playing their third Power 5 opponent back-to-back on the road. I think Minnesota, you know, just the culture that P.J. Fleck's building there, when you're coming off a 48-14 win on the road in Pac-12 country, I think they're believing in themselves. And I watched the Buffalo game, and, yeah, they nowhere near came close to the cover, but they missed three field goals. They threw an interception in the end zone. It was a sloppy game. I'll chalk it up to first week and first game under a new head coach. I like the Gophers a lot. I'm just waiting to pounce on a very advantageous number, especially since I've seen, you know, action go against Minnesota last week and steam beyond Middle Tennessee each of the first 2 weeks.
And this is one of those games, I talked about this yesterday as a little bit of a monologue at the end of the show, discussing how you apply power ratings, what the true value of power ratings is. And it's in getting the openers, getting line value, and then projecting where you think lines are going to go. It's not a be-all, end-all handicapping tool. You have to apply context. You have to break down the game the way that you just did, Brad. I've got this game 7.5. So even at 10, I'm not crossing any significant numbers. It's not a game that I'm going to be looking to play necessarily. But let's say it got to 10.5. I still don't think I would take Middle Tennessee State for the reasons that you mentioned. This is schematically a bad matchup for them. They're playing a physical, run-it-down-your-throat type of team, and Middle Tennessee just played that in Vanderbilt and looked awful in the process. Factor in Stockstill being hurt, factor in the fact that last year when Stockstill was hurt, they were horrendous. Not just offensively, but defensively they were really bad. They had a game where they just played all Wildcat. It was a mess. So if Stockstill enters this game hurt, you know, I mean, can you really back Middle Tennessee State? If he exits this game in the first quarter, you're probably sitting on a dead ticket. So you got to keep that in mind, too, where Minnesota can get after the quarterback, is stronger up front than Middle Tennessee State. Lots of factors here in this one. So while you can use the power ratings as a guide, you certainly have to handicap much more than just that one number.
No doubt. And look, you can have a power ratings play and be off the line 3 points and think you got to play. But then, you know, I got pure handicap situation, a handicap, you know, particular matchups. That can be, you know, give 3 points advantage in the other direction, and that can have a basic no ticket. So you're exactly right in the way you broke that down and the fact that power ranks are a starting point. I mean, they're an understanding and jumping on early numbers and that, but the other factor on it, and just as important, if not more important, is your situation, your technical, your matchup handicapping. And for me, that's the rubber stamp on a play that I'm going to release to customers. It's got to be there from a power ratings aspect. It's got to be there from a situation. It's got to be there maybe taking advantage of a key number. It could be 1 point off of my power ratings, but, you know, if it's 1 point off surrounding a key number, that can make all the difference in the world. So just understand that, you know, I know guys that are just strictly technical handicappers. I know guys that are strictly, you know, situational. Some just go off their power ratings and that's it. I like to encompass everything, and I think that, you know, it creates a lot more work for me. I mean, it's 80-90 hours a week instead of just, you know, going by that one thing. But I like to encompass everything into my overall handicap of a game.
All right, one more game I definitely want to talk about from a college football standpoint here this week. We have not touched on this game, but this is a really tricky handicap, I think. We talked earlier in the year about how I don't think that odds makers put up anything that's actually a trap line. People like to say that things are trap lines. People like to say that, you know, the odds makers are trying to set you up. They're trying to play games. I don't think that's the case at all. Sometimes they're taking positions, but, you know, they're not in the interest of trying to outsmart everybody. They're in the interest of putting up a number that's going to get balanced action, going to wind up giving them, you know, something in the black at the end of the day. This Ole Miss and Cal line is really tough for me to decipher. Ole Miss, only a 3.5-point road favorite here. Shea Patterson obviously can run this offense. They've scored 92 points in two games. Cal out east against North Carolina, won outright. Back west against Weber State, did not play very well last week. Brad, are you seeing an edge in this game? How are you breaking it down?
Yeah, I'm going to take California. I think it's a very unique trip for Mississippi. Look, it was a unique trip for Georgia last week to Notre Dame, and they played well. But in this particular instance, you know, I don't know if I trust the overall stability of the Mississippi program to handle, you know, going out there to a venue that's very unique to them. It's only the second time they played in the Pacific time zone in school history. So that's how much of a unique trip for them it is. I loved what I saw from Cal week one, hated what I saw from them against Weber State, a game that was, you know, nip and tuck, was actually very misleading. The fact that they won by double digits in the game, and it was not like that, you know, for at least the first three quarters. For me, I can get a home dog, two very similar style teams. They want to get up and down there. There's going to be a lot of points, totals at 72. Give me the home underdog plus the 3.5. That being the fact that I took a stance on Mississippi in the preseason and bet them over their season win total, and this is a game I probably need to cash that ticket. With that being said, my beer power rankings have this game at like 2, 2.5. That's right through a key number, so I like Cal plus the points.
I actually have this one right on the 3.5, so I won't have any interest. But again, that is one of those interesting handicapping elements. The concern that I have here is North Carolina's offense is really bad, and Cal still found a way to give up 30 points. I know there was a garbage time touchdown in there, but it looks like Shea Patterson can run this Ole Miss offense. I mean, he's had some pretty big-time video game numbers, 60 of 78 passing for 918 yards, 9-1 touchdown interception ratio. I get that they played South Alabama and Tennessee Martin. I fully understand that. Cal has more athletes on defense than those two teams do, but you know, this is also one of those games, too, where if you're Justin Wilcox, you know, you want to beat Ole Miss. You want to win this game. You're trying to establish a different culture there with your program. But you start Pac-12 play next week with USC at home. You go to Oregon. You go to Washington. You host Washington State. I mean, yeah, it's an SEC team coming to town. But I don't know if this is one of those games that has Cal's full focus.
Yeah, well, I think it does. I mean, you got a relatively new program. If Sonny Dykes was a coach, I'd have some concerns. But, I mean, you got a new coach, two brand-new coordinators. I would like to think that you're focused on the game. There's so many – I'm glad you brought it up because it's such a unique game. I mean, the Mississippi-Cal, you just don't see a game like that on the schedule too much. You know, I question Mississippi, but again, when I said stability, you also got an interim coach that's probably coaching to get the full-time gig there. I mean, if he puts together a 7-8 win type of season, you'd like to think he'd get some legitimate consideration. So I actually think both teams are kind of motivated to win the game. Both similar style type of teams. I think you can get a lot of positive momentum to start off the season. Both teams have a chance to go 3-0, get halfway there to bowl eligibility. So I expect both teams to at least have a B-plus type of, I would say, mentality going into it. Maybe not an A or A-plus circle the calendar type of game, but I expect both teams to give a solid effort.
All right, well, in the interest of moving on to the NFL here, I'm going to bypass the pick six for this week. Do you have an exclusive free pick for our show listeners, though?
Yeah, you know what? I'm going to play against it. I know it's one of the more popular public teams of the entire country. I'm going to take Pittsburgh plus the points at home against Oklahoma State. I thought they outplayed Penn State. They got the cover against them, 24-14 first down edges, their largest home underdog role since 2001. Oklahoma State's made back-to-back trips across the country, down to South Alabama, back to Oklahoma, back to Pittsburgh. It was a game that was a shootout last year, 7-point difference. I got Pittsburgh, a ground-and-pounding team that was able to control the clock against Penn State. They were just minus a couple turnovers, got a safety against them. Give me Pittsburgh plus the points.
All right, let's move over to the NFL here. And, Brad, you're a contrarian better in the NFL, and that's something you've had a lot of success with. And contrarian betting really worked last week with Detroit and Oakland both coming away with covers and victories as small underdogs. Are you seeing a similar type of setup and strategy here this week?
Well, I was on the opposite sides of both of those. I mean, contrarian in what? You know, playing against major big line moves throughout the course of the summer. Because, you know, I took Arizona plus the points. I took, you know, Tennessee plus the points early summer lines. They flipped the favorites. So I had the much better numbers, but obviously horrible results in that case. And you get that with week one. Now, contrarian and being anti-public, like, you know, betting on like a Kansas City or a Cleveland or Chicago Bears, absolutely. Being contrarian in those three games obviously worked out very well. So, you know, look, I'm always going to be contrarian in the NFL. It's the most bet, obviously, by far sport where I think you can make just legitimate money just being contrarian because there's so much public action. I mean, if there's one thing week two represents that's a little bit more, you know, advantageous than any other week is, You get clear overreaction to what you see the week before. You get it every week, but you really get it in week two because you only have one data point of information. And I love playing on teams that are 0-1 that look like absolute garbage in week one against teams that were 1-0, really great in week one and far exceeded expectations. I guess a couple that I would pinpoint, you know, Washington, if it's not for the fact that, you know, McVay coached at Washington last year, I would love Washington. I still like Washington and wouldn't be stunned if they went, you know, the West Coast and won that game. But, you know, that's one I'd key in on. You know, the Giants, Detroit, and that'll be an interesting performance there. Giants looking so abysmal offensively. Detroit, you know, looking so great in the second half against Arizona. I'm not saying bet blindly every 0-1 team against every 1-0 team, but I think long-term profits can be made, you know, every single week too. I would, if you're asking me what I should do on every single week too for the rest of my life, I would love to be playing on teams that look very poor in week one. But also understand, in the instance of a team like the Indianapolis Colts, there might be a reason they look very awful in week number one, and they don't have a quarterback.
There's one game that really stands out to me here this week, and that's Philadelphia and Kansas City. Kansas City, everybody saw what they did to the New England Patriots, the reigning Super Bowl champions, in that Thursday night game. Alex Smith looked absolutely phenomenal. Tom Brady looked absolutely terrible, which is not something that we would expect to see from Tom Brady very often. It was one of the worst regular season games he's ever had. I think I wrote about this in my preview for one of the games here. I think it was the New England New Orleans game this week that, you know, I think Tom Brady had like the fifth lowest completion percentage in a regular season game in his career or something like that. So, you know, it was an off game for Tom Brady, and that happens. But when you look at the market here this week, when you look at how money is coming in on Kansas City, I don't know, it feels to me like this is an overreaction to that week one win over New England.
Yeah, I would say so. And I know they looked really good. But, again, they were they were going to get the cover no matter what. But, I mean, it was such a far outlier, especially the fourth quarter, you know, going at 21-0 spot on New England. On the flip side, I thought Philadelphia had a little bit of a misleading win against Washington, take advantage of four Washington turnovers in that regard. But obviously, people are buying into Kansas City. They love Kareem Hunt. They love the efficiency from Alex Smith. I'm worried that they lost one of their best players on defense, especially their best player in the secondary, and Eric Berry, for the season. I think that's a factor that's not getting consideration in the marketplace. I'm going to let the line get bet up because I'll probably have a ticket. I'll tell you one thing. I got to look at weather a little bit more, but I like the over in the game. I mean, all right, I'll buy Kansas City's very efficient on offense, and they looked the part and put up the biggest number ever on a Bill Belichick defense. And I'll buy the part that they might take a step back in the defensive secondary. I also think Carson Wentz taking a step forward. He looked decent, 26 out of 39 last week. I'm going to go over 47.5. And, you know, right now, if you want me to take a stance, I'll take Philadelphia plus the points.
I do want to ask you about this because these two teams are very similar. I mean, Doug Peterson was Andy Reid's offensive coordinator there in Kansas City. So, you know, it's kind of like that meme that goes around on Twitter of Spider-Man pointing at Spider-Man. That's sort of how I feel about this game, is that you've got two teams that know each other really well. So the question then becomes, I know you already said that you're leaning toward the over, but a lot of people will probably think, okay, these coaches can read each other's minds. They're going to know what's coming. I'm going to play the under. I'm going to look for a low-scoring game. But on the flip side, you also know where you can beat the weaknesses in a defense. So I think that you're onto something there with the over.
Yeah, and look, you're right. And all right, so then if you're saying under, well, both head coaches are going to figure out each other's offenses. Then I don't understand the Kansas City money. If you're going to play, you know, and take the consideration on under, then to me, I think there'd be correlation on Philadelphia if that were the case. So I just expect the points to be plenty. At least I got to go off the data point when I saw. And I see two improved quarterbacks. I see some extra weapons on both sides. Kareem Hunt is actually an upgrade from Spencer Ware. And a lot of people thought he would be that case, you know, by the end of the season. It just, he took off and ran with it in week one. So, and Philadelphia's got extra weapons that they didn't have last year. Again, are these, you know, super strong plays? You know, the NFL I kind of ease into. I take a particular stance in the preseason, a relatively strong stance on particular teams. But, you know, week one, week two, I'm kind of meandering through it a little bit. Keep in mind, I'm a college guy first and foremost, and that's the sport that I'm not afraid to take much stronger stances, at least in the first couple weeks of the season.
Lots of good thoughts here on today's show with Brad Powers from BradPowersSports.com. Brad, what's going on over at the website right now?
Yeah, BradPowersSports.com. If you're interested in the newsletter that takes a detailed write-up on each and every college game, each and every NFL game, each and every week, it's sent to you via email each and every Wednesday. You get it all the way through the Super Bowl. Still, the price is up there for $79. I will be taking it down soon, I promise. But $79 if you want that discounted price that covers you all the way through the Super Bowl. And, again, a weekly newsletter that's got you, you know, everything that you can name as far as the betting aspect. You know, recapping the weeks prior, bad beats, major injuries, you know, misleading finals. Yeah, again, you write up on every single game. You get my top picks of the week. I can't forget that. Computer projected lines, ATS trends of the week. You name it, you got it. All in the Powers Picks newsletter, $79 for the entire season.
And you can follow Brad on Twitter at Brad Powers and the number 7. Brad, thank you so much for your time. As always, man, really appreciate it. We'll talk to you again next week.
All right, sounds good. Take care.
Strong stuff there today from Brad Powers at BradPowersSports.com. And again, you know, we talk about different perspectives. We talk about the time of year that it is. So much to talk about here on these segments. And you know, I'm glad that we're able to bring so many different opinions on so many different games to the shows here on Bang the Book Radio. One more segment left for this Thursday. That is with Mr. Ralph Michaels from WagerTalk.com. Ralph, how's it going today, man?
You know, I'm glad you said we get to cover all sports. Go Tribe. Adam, it's going great. Thank you.
This is so much fun, man. I'm telling you, I actually got to meet your son, too, at the game the other night. That was really cool. Thanks for telling him to come and stop by. It was really awesome. And, you know, hey, I mean, for me, the end goal is always for this team to get to the playoffs and play meaningful games in September. And, you know, they've done that for two straight years. So, you know, I'm certainly happy with that. But I got to say, you know, as much as I love 21, as exciting as this has been, I will be disappointed if they can't find a way to win it all in that big tournament of variance that's coming up next month.
Yeah, we'll trade 21 wins for 11 wins in the postseason any day of the year, right?
Absolutely.
You know, let me put you on a spot. And, you know, Indians fans certainly can win quite a few beers if you're at a bar and you want to make a bar bet. Who's the only player that played in all 21 games during the streak, Adam?
Giovanni Urshela.
Very good. So, I mean, how many people would know that? That's very, very impressive that you are aware of that. And, again, Tribe fans, you win a lot of bar bets with that.
No doubt. It's kind of funny because back in 2007 when they won the division and blew the 3-1 lead to Boston in the ALCS, it was their first playoff trip, you know, since 2001. And they had a guy in Aaron Cunningham who was a defensive replacement, came in left field pretty much every time they had a late lead. And the team actually started calling him the closer because he was that, you know, defensive replacement. And they had such a great record when he was in the game. So maybe they're kind of doing that a little bit with Gio Urshela here this year. All right, let's talk football, though. That's what all of our listeners want to hear. As much as we could wax poetic about the Indians for a long time, and believe me, I know I certainly could. Week 3, college football. Same exact thing as going from week 1 to week 2. We're still seeing overreactions out there in the marketplace.
You know, no question. There's a couple examples I have. One is from past history, and one is from the recent results. I think the biggest overreaction we have are the Baylor Bears, you know, having lost to an FCS team in their opener and then to UTSA last week. You know, the Bears would have been a favorite at Duke in game of the year lines with Matt Rhule taking over, and now they're a 14-point dog. It's a situation where they're changing quarterbacks. Duke in a unique situation as a double-digit non-conference Power 5 home favorite. I'm actually backing the dog, and as bad as they've looked in those two games, I think, again, on the road gives them a little reason to gel, and such a unique situation for Duke. I am on Baylor plus the points. The second situation I have
– it's amazing. Sorry, this number's up to – no, it's fine. This number's up to 14.5 now. I actually just saw it move up on the odds screen. It's remarkable. I mean, I had Baylor minus 2.5 before the season. So I don't know what your number was on it, but that's a 17-point move in 3 weeks, according to my power ratings, which are not gospel, and I wouldn't swear by them relative to the guys I have on the show here. But that's incredible. I'm sure there's been situations like this in recent years. I can't think of one off the top of my head.
Nor can I. Not 17 points and not in week 3. So, you know, again, it's a game that there's value on the board. And, hey, if Baylor loses by 20, then we know there's bigger issues. But these are one of those games that you'll look at it later in the year. Baylor is probably, you know, I'm going to say, let's say they scoot out a 6-6 year and Duke probably you know, six, seven, eight wins, you're going to say, well, this line should have been closer to three. And I still think it's going to be that way. Again, I'm going to buy in to Baylor. You go through changes when you're making a coaching change. And again, they're going through big changes. They're going through, you know, they're going through cultural changes as well as a game plan change and the type and the way they play football. So a lot of bonding can happen on a road trip, and I expect that to happen this week.
Didn't mean to cut you off. What's the other game that you're looking at?
You know, I'm looking at Cincinnati and Miami of Ohio. You know, being an Ohioan, and, you know, it's a game where Cincinnati has won 11 straight. It's for the victory bell. Over the last 9 years, Cincinnati has been a double-digit favorite every game, and in those nine last years, the average line is 20 points. Now,
wow.
Cincinnati is off a game against Austin Peay where they got outgained. They lost to Michigan. Miami of Ohio played a very good game against Marshall but lost, and then also beat Austin Peay last week. So let's just compare the Austin Peay games. Vegas had Cincinnati, a 41.5-point favorite, 2 weeks ago. They had Miami as a 32-point favorite last year. So Vegas makes Cincinnati 9 points better, but now we have Miami minus 4.5 in a roll, in a rival, as a favorite for the first time in that many years. So I think, again, that's an overreaction of Cincinnati's Austin Peay performance and then the Michigan game. And I think that's where you look back at history, what has occurred, and there's too big of an adjustment in this game.
That is really interesting. I talked about that game early on in the week. I wound up being able to grab the pick opener at Bet Online on Miami of Ohio. So kind of holding on to that ticket. I'm still debating if I want to play back on Cincinnati or not, but that is fascinating. I didn't even recognize that fact, you know, as I was looking at that game. I just sort of thought to myself, pretty much what basically it seems like everybody else has done, look at Cincinnati and say, man, they've been really bad. And Miami, you know, I mean, we're also operating off some recency bias with Miami as well from last year, where they went from 0-6 to 6-6, went to a bowl game, should have beaten Mississippi State in that bowl game. You know, we're talking about basically what at this point, 8, 9, 10 months of steam on Miami of Ohio being a much better team than who they were at the start of last year. So I don't think it's just an overreaction to the first 2 weeks. I think that's kind of a statement on what Miami's done over the last, you know, 10 months.
Well, let's also look back now and be realistic. Cincinnati was the first team to ever lose their first six games and then win their final six to get to a bowl. Those wins were against Kent State, Bowling Green, Eastern and Central Michigan, Buffalo, and Ball State. And then their win this year was against Austin Peay. You put up those seven wins against anyone, and it's going to be the lowest-ranked schedule in football. So, again, look at who they beat. The records are great. The streak is great. But who they've beaten and who they've played is far from impressive.
This is really interesting. These are angles I didn't even consider for this game, and that's part of the reason why I love this show and why I love having this platform, because it's not just that, you know, people think clearly more highly of Miami of Ohio. It's that this number has gone from 4 to 5.5. So Miami is also the preferred side in the betting market too at this point. I mean, you may be able to pick off a 6 or 6.5 on Cincinnati here.
Boy, if you do, I'm all over it. You know, again, you still have Cincinnati kids, and you know, last year when Miami and Cincinnati played was the lowest line in the group. It was still 13. You know, and that was a Cincinnati team that was going to fire their coach, and that was a Miami team that was going to be red hot. And that final score was 27-20 Cincinnati. So, again, a clear overreaction because of Cincinnati, and you add in the history factor as well, which I always do. I always go through each week, and I look at the biggest line adjustments from the previous 3 years. 1 year, you know, you can't have an anomaly, but I always go back at when you have a rival, I look at the lines for the last 3 years, and if there's a huge variance this year, there better be some damn good reasons, and in this case, I don't find them.
Out of curiosity, what's your power rating on this, or your power rating line on this game?
I have Miami 1. Now, that's just my flat rating. That's not taking the history into effect and everything else going in. So into this week, I had Miami 1. I the pick line, I understand. The one line, I understand. But, you know, Miami of Ohio has been a home favorite a total of 5 times in 4 years, and 3 of those games were FCS opponents. So now you're putting a whole other situation in, having a team expecting them to win at home against as a favorite when they've only done that twice in 4 years.
That is, wow. There's a lot of good stuff here on this game and perspectives and statistics that I didn't even contemplate, you know, as being out there. And I think that that's, you know, something that separates commoners like me from people that, you know, can actually do this for a living and people like you. So, man, fascinating. Great breakdown there of that game. I'm really glad that we were able to talk about that one, and I'm glad that you brought that one to the show here. All right, I know that you're a big situational handicapper in a lot of ways. I know that's something that we talk about a lot when it comes to college basketball. We'll be able to do that here once we get into November and actually get the season underway. But we've got an interesting situational spot with Iowa State and Akron. Iowa State's now up to a 10.5-point favorite across the market. Akron, not a very good MAC team, didn't play well in week one against Penn State. They beat somebody from the FCS last week. I don't even remember who they played. But this looks like one of those games here where, you know, you have Iowa State in a very bad spot. Lost in overtime in their rivalry game against Iowa. Probably should have had it won. Jacob Park threw a horrible interception. Now they're being asked to go on the road and cover as a double-digit favorite. Something about this game just doesn't line up correctly.
Well, I'm in agreement with you. Akron beat Arkansas Pine Bluff 52-3 in that game at the tip of your tongue. But, you know, I'm going to go back and I'm going to ask our listeners to think back 2 weeks ago, which nobody does. Iowa State 2 weeks ago played Northern Iowa, one of the best FCS teams. And, oh, yeah, by the way, Iowa State lost the previous year to Northern Iowa and lost two of the last three games to them. So they had huge in-state revenge against Northern Iowa and then had a turnaround the next week and had an in-state rival, Iowa, on deck. So playing back-to-back games against with revenge against an in-state rival is incredible. Now, again, I'm with you. You're asking them to go on the road. This will be their only seventh time they're an away favorite in the last 10 years and only the third time in three seasons. And, oh, yeah, by the way, they're minus yards per game on the year. They only outgained Northern Iowa by 27 yards, and they got outgained against Iowa last week. So you got a team that, as all-state rivals, now traveling, a very rare away favorites role. Now, you know, Campbell does return back to the MAC. He was a head coach at Toledo for 4 years, so he has a little insight to Akron. He knows what to expect. Well, what do you expect? You expect a lot of empty seats that Iowa State's not used to playing with, a very open stadium with, you know, no end zone seats on the one side. It's a unique setting in Akron. It really can lull people asleep. So it's a very, very tough setting, and I'm backing the Dogs.
I actually like that stadium a lot. And what's interesting is the last time that Akron hosted a Power 5 team was when they played Pitt back in 2015. Now, they lost the game 24-7. They were a 12.5-point dog, but I was at that game, and it effing poured for like four straight hours. Just no let up whatsoever. It started a little bit before the game, and then it just hammered down all game long. And for Akron, you know, if you're playing a game in very heavy rain and you're playing a Pitt team that at the time was just all about power running, it was all about running the football down your throat, Akron can't hang in a spot like that. They just can't do it. So if you're looking back to a situation like that as sort of a data point for you, don't, because that was a game that was much different than it would seem. I know I live bet the second half under and it came in extremely easily. But this is a big spot for a team like Akron to get a Power 5 conference team to come to the Rubber City. I mean, this is a game they're going to be up for, and I don't know if Iowa State can do the same thing.
Well, you know, they're off a win, so that's a rarity. And, you know, Akron's been on the cusp. I mean, this is a team that, you know, they love having Terry Bowden there. They love the big-time head coach. But, you know, three out of the last 4 years, they've gone 5-7. So this is the type of game that they need to pull the upset to have a chance to get those six wins and go to a bowl. So, you know, while – does Akron have it circled? Well, I'll tell you what, they knew they weren't going to beat Penn State. They're off an Arkansas Pine Bluff win. So they've done exactly what they're expected. I mean, they have 15 starters back. They have a nice offense, you know, including their quarterback back. They have a lot of Letterman back. They have a lot of depth. And again, this is clearly a situation where I like the dog. Now, one negative note I will tell you, Akron is 0-6-1 ATS as a home dog the last 3 years. Again, trends and angles are great. You could find them to support your game. You could find them to go against your play. You put everything in the mix and what's stronger when it comes out the end. I'm just mentioning that so people know the good and the bad in this situation.
And it's one of those games that a lot of people are just going to gloss over. They're going to be like, well, I don't want to play an Akron game. I don't want to play an Iowa State game. But it is one of those examples on a college football Saturday where you have to be cognizant of the entire card. You have to look for those opportunities to get games that have, you know, some sort of line value or some sort of situational or technical line value. And maybe this is one. I mean, maybe Akron's just not good enough to play with a Power 5 team coming to town. Iowa State looks better. Matt Campbell's putting this program in the right direction. So, yeah, maybe Akron does get beat by 17 or 21 or who knows even more. But still, there are just so many different angles with which to handicap this game. I think it's an example of why it's important to actually sit down and look at the entire card and look for some of these advantageous situations.
I've got one more ugly game for you if you want to talk ugly. I'm a Utah State fan this week going to Wake Forest. How many people are going to bet Utah State and Wake Forest? You know, Wake Forest 2-0, and they're getting some love. They beat Boston College handily, and they beat Presbyterian, so they're 2-0. They're excited. They're a double-digit favorite. Well, Wake Forest last week against Boston College, they were outgained. They had a +4 turnover edge, and that's important to look early when you have a team that was outgained and should have lost but won 34-10, so the public thinks they're better than they are. Wake Forest has been a double-digit once in the last 7 years against an FBS team. That was last year. In their opener, everyone is excited about Wake Forest. They laid 17 to Tulane. They won that game 7-3. Utah State off a Thursday night game. They got their confidence back after losing to Wisconsin in the opener. I think it's a great spot for Utah State, perhaps even to pull the upset. Look for Wake Forest to play back to their normal level this week.
I'll tell you what, two angles I want to touch on for this game. The first is that the one concern I've got about Utah State is that they went and played at Wisconsin, went back home to Logan, now a long trip out to Winston-Salem, a place that they generally don't go. So that is one thing that would worry me a little bit in this game for Utah State. The other side of this coin is if Utah State plays well, and you are taking them here, they're a 13.5-point dog, if they play well and keep this game really close, I am 100% against them next week against San Jose State. San Jose State will probably get blown out again this week by Utah. They have not looked good in their first few games. But going from Madison back home to Logan, out to Winston-Salem, then to San Jose, brutal situational spot for Utah. With BYU on deck on a short week, which is a rivalry game for them, San Jose State's going to be in a perfect spot in week four, you know, if things line up the way that I'm hoping they do.
Agreed. I totally agree. But again, with Utah State, let me bring back one point. They are off a Thursday game, so that travel to the East Coast is much less in negative than it would be playing Saturday to Saturday.
No, that's fair. That's completely fair. I'm just – you want to look at the big picture. You know, you want to try to have everything laid out there in front of you. And I think that it's good, too, you know, to be able to challenge you on a point like that, to say, okay, you really like Utah State. I think you're on the right track there with that one. But – I can ask you this question. You can give me an answer. At least you considered it, because you already have considered that, because as you said, they played a Thursday night game. So a few extra days of practice and so on, a few extra days to get out to where they're going. That's significant. And that is something that, you know, you need to pay attention to, because if you're just looking at results, you're not going to realize that Utah State's had extra time to prepare.
If you're handicapping a game and you write down all the positives for a game and you don't have at least half as many negatives as you do positives, you're not doing that game justice when you're handicapping it. Absolutely, Adam. I completely agree. Don't be afraid to find negatives in a game, guys. That's what handicapping is all about. It's not just finding all the positive points. Anyone can make positive points. It's making sure you looked at all the negative points, weighing them together, and that's how you handicap football or any sport in that matter.
Let's move to a couple of four bigger name programs. Let's talk about this Tennessee and Florida game. Both of these teams, in my mind, are underachievers here, and that's probably what should be the perception. I mean, Florida is a team that, you know, is very good. Tennessee is a team that has some very good upside, but both of them having some issues getting to that point here over the last couple of years. Florida is a 4.5-point favorite, mostly across the market. There's a couple of fives out there. Doesn't seem like Florida's getting Antonio Callaway or Jordan Scarlett back for this game. They've got all sorts of problems. Tennessee, you know, a lot of transition last year with Josh Dobbs, this year without Josh Dobbs. Tough handicap, I would say.
You know, the one negative for Florida Gator fans is that off the Michigan game and being bereft of a few talented skill players, they're the ones that needed that Northern Colorado game to get back in sync, to get some confidence, and that game was canceled because of the hurricane. So while Tennessee was able to fix a few of their mistakes, I mean, granted they came back and beat Georgia Tech, they allowed 535 yards rushing, and that's just abysmal. So, you know, there's no coming back from that for a while. But, you know, it's a game where Florida is still offensively challenged. I mean, you know, losing those two players is one thing. Running through your quarterbacks and not showing who your quarterback is going to be. I believe they played three quarterbacks in the Michigan game. Well, again, this is the perfect situation where one of those quarterbacks could have taken the reins in the Northern Colorado win. So, you know, it's a game where I am going to pass on a side. I am certainly looking at the total. When a team like Tennessee gives up all those yards, you work on the defense. The offense is going to be in position to not turn the ball over. When you're on the road in an SEC game, that's your goal, is to eat some clock, is to not turn the ball over. You know, Butch Jones, I'm not huge in ATS angles, but Tennessee has not had a lot of good luck off a big win. Butch Jones is 2-16 straight up and 4-13-1 against the spread off a big win of 14 points or more. So Tennessee gets that big win, is feeling good off an FCS win, now has to travel on the road to play a very good defensive team in a very tough setting. I actually like the under in this game. And as far as the side goes, gun to my head, I'd probably lean with Tennessee because Florida did have that game canceled, but it's a game that won't be on my card and I won't be playing it.
I really like the Butch Jones angle. I think that is something that has to be handicapped about this game because I don't think anything of Butch Jones. And when you look at how poorly Tennessee has performed in close games decided by 7 points or less, they have not been good at all. And, I mean, they had that one season a couple of years ago where they blew every close game they possibly could. And this one, with a low total, with a spread of 4.5 or 5, it projects as a game that's going to be close and low scoring. And, you know, in a situation like that, especially without an experienced quarterback, you kind of rely on the head coach a little bit there. And I just don't see that being a profitable way to look at this game with Tennessee. Now, look, also Florida, we don't know what Florida is. We don't know who Florida is. We don't know what kind of quarterback play they're going to get. The only thing that we know about this game is that Florida's defense should be pretty good. And that's probably a stay away then, ultimately. But I do agree with you that, you know, I would look for this to be a game where offense is set back a few decades.
You know, one more thing I didn't mention was that Florida has dominated the series. Florida had won 11 straight games up until last year, and even last year they were up 21-0, and then Joshua Dobbs, who's playing for the Pittsburgh Steelers, led the Vols to 38 unanswered points, and they won 38-28. So Tennessee knows they've gone to Florida 5 straight times and have not won. Tennessee knows they lost 11 straight before a fortunate comeback last year and they don't have Dobbs at quarterback. So that's the mental aspect that the coaches are aware of. They're going to tell their players not to worry about it, but those players and coaches are very aware that they have not won down in Florida in a decade.
Where do you think this number ultimately goes? Do you think we see this number come down because of what Florida did against Michigan, or do you feel like we see this number come up a little bit, you know, because – I mean, it's not like Tennessee is all that impressive of a resume either over the last couple of years. Do you think it just sits there between 4 and 6?
I do. You know, you know what you're getting from Florida, and no one's going to know anything else. I mean, we know we don't know much about Florida, but that's all that anyone's going to know. You know, as far as Tennessee goes, you know, the whole world saw the Georgia Tech game being on Labor Day. You know, and that tends to be a negative towards Tennessee. You know, you talk about overreactions and how they got gashed. Well, boom, that's an overreaction. Because they were playing the option, because they normally don't face the option. So, again, is it because their defense is bad, or is it because they were just in a situation Labor Day? Georgia was playing in the new Mercedes-Benz Dome, which is 1.5 miles from their campus. The whole world is watching you on Monday Night Football. You know, so, again, and then beating Indiana State last week doesn't tell us anything. So, between both teams, we really don't know much. So, you go back to your preseason power ratings. You make some adjustments for the Callaway, the wide receiver Callaway, and the running back Scarlett for Florida, and then you have your line and you see where it is now. So pretty much, you know, the beginning of the year, this line was 6 for me preseason. So the number where it is, down 1.5, 4.5, is where I would probably put it, 4 or 4.5 for Florida with those two suspensions. Actually, 9 suspensions, but the two key offensive players.
All right, let's move to Texas and Southern Cal here. Now, a few years ago, this would have been a game that got significant billing, two blue blood programs. Well, now as we look at this game in week 3 of the 2017 season, Southern Cal is laying anywhere from 15 to 17 out there in the market. This number is kind of all over the place. Greek at 16, Pinnacle at 15.5, same with Bookmaker as we're recording here on Thursday afternoon. Looks like Shane Buechele's going to go for the Longhorns. He is listed as probable now. Reports are that he's going to be available. Look, they need him because if they can't throw the ball on USC, they're going to have a real hard time sticking around in this game, I think.
Well, you know, USC is now facing their third straight rush attack. They faced Western Michigan. They faced Stanford, and now they're facing Texas, and we know Texas wants to run the ball. Now, while USC's offense has looked incredible, what concerns me is that they allowed 28 points per game to Western Michigan and Stanford, and they allowed 350 yards per game. So you have a team, Tom Herman, who was 5-0 as a dog in Houston. He's in his first dog role in Texas. He's pulled those upsets. He's beat those big teams. You know, the couple of things to point out for USC, which I really like, is – that they ran the ball against Stanford in the second half. They were mano a mano. They looked like Stanford running between the tackles, and that was impressive to me. With USC in the past, they've always lost an early game to a team they shouldn't have. They never tried to run the ball. They got into trouble with turnovers. That game plan changed this year. So I'm very impressed with USC from that respect. You know, and now you're looking at the situation where – you know, can USC handle the success? They've not done it in the past. Clay Helton's a different coach. He's a lunchbox kind of guy. There's no more hype in Raiderville. I mean, USC Raiders, they used to be the same. USC and the Raiders both would have celebrities in camp, you know, all the alum coming in and talking during the practices. Well, those are done. Practices are closed to anyone outside of the team now. It really is a hardcore lunch pail team that has work ethic on their mind, and that's the difference in this game that I like, is that USC really has a different mentality.
I think that is a big thing because people look at USC and they think, okay, Sam Darnold. And Sam Darnold's been good. I mean, he's thrown some real dimes out there, especially in the red zone. He's been very good with his decision-making in the red zone. But they're more than that. They are a multi-dimensional offensive team. Ronald Jones is having a big year running the football. It's USC. You know they have running back depth. That's the thing that I think probably ends up getting overlooked here sometimes about some of these premier programs is that, you know, a team like USC is very balanced offensively. You know, they do have Sam Darnold, who's probably going to be, you know, a first-round pick in the NFL draft this year if he comes out. But they have that running game. It's not like UCLA where everyone looks at Josh Rosen and says, I'm going to bet on that guy. Well, they can't run the football. So when they actually play a defense that might be able to stop the pass, they're going to be in trouble. USC can attack you from multiple angles. And that's something I think really needs to be appreciated, especially as we highly scrutinize all these top 10 types of teams. You want to separate the ones that are balanced, the ones that can do a lot of things well, from the teams that are a little bit more one-dimensional.
Yeah, you know, any defensive coordinator can plan and scheme to shut down one phase of the offense, but when you have a multi-level offense that can run and pass, that's a different type story, and that's the difference between your elite teams on offense and just one of your very good teams. You know, we see it time and time again, some of those passing offenses from the Big 12 that put up 600 yards a game, 50 points a game, they finally go on the road and play a good defense, and all of a sudden they're shut down. Well, again, they're only having to shut down the pass game because they can't throw the ball. So we'll see if it continues, but that's the one thing I took out of that USC-Stanford game in the second half was running between the tackles, moving the chain, staying ahead of where you need to be, and I'm very, very impressed. Now, as far as this game goes, I will not be betting USC despite all the love I've been giving them. You know, I think Texas can slow the clock. I think Texas was mauled against Maryland. They were not the better team on the field, but the San Jose State win was good. You can look and you can say, well, you know, they shut out San Jose. It was only San Jose, but I think the yards were 680 to 170. San Jose, I think, put up 13 or 14 points in the first quarter against South Florida, have a new, 28-year-old the OC. They're in a pass-happy offense. So to completely shut them down, I think it gets them back on track. And I'm going to, again, lean to a lower-scoring game in this. And in a lower-scoring game, where at least where I'm fading the under, you're getting two touchdowns with a team that we know Tom Herman can still coach. I mean, it's not as if, though, he forgot how to coach against Maryland. It's just you're getting a team that has been a train wreck the last few years under Charlie Strong, try to get him back on the tracks.
All right, let's flip over to the professionals here, talk a little bit of NFL, and let's start with the same things that we kind of talked about there with college in terms of overreactions out there in the marketplace. And there certainly are some, and I'm seeing some even pop up on the odds screen here as I'm talking for today's show. What do you see out there, Rolf? Do you feel like there are some pretty clear overreactions out there?
Well, you know, we talked about making a bar bet at the top of the show. How many beers could I want if I told you that Buffalo was on top of the AFC East, Jacksonville was on top of the AFC South, and the Rams were on top of the NFC West? You know, again, I wouldn't have bet that Buffalo was ever on top of the AFC East the entire season. So, yes, you're going to have your overreactions. Obviously, some teams look so good. You have Jacksonville into Houston. And I was on Houston. I was part of that public train that figured the overreaction. We talked about it. We talked about comparing it to Katrina and the Saints when they had their first home game. But Jacksonville has a solid defense. They were number six last year. And I think that's probably the overreaction game because Jacksonville is off that Houston game. And, you know, the world knows the Houston game. Everyone was aware of the Texans playing and J.J. Watt, and everyone knows that score. You ask Joe Public who won that game, probably everybody knows. Yes, some other games they might not know. Tennessee was that early media darling pick. Everyone thought Tennessee was the next upcoming team. You know, we're going to pick them. They can win the division. They might be a long shot to win the AFC. So now you're matching up those situations where Tennessee – a public favorite off a loss. Jacksonville was anti-public. They're off a win. Jacksonville just 5-13 as a home dog the last 4 years. If the game flips and they're a favorite, they're only 2-5 as a home favorite the last 2 years. You saw Jacksonville get incredible pressure. They had 10 or 11 sacks. Well, you know, Tom Savage is, you know, I thought the Browns had the worst quarterbacks, or I thought the Jets had the worst quarterbacks, or I thought Denver had the worst quarterbacks, but Tom Savage is pretty close in that group. So, you know, you saw Houston move the ball a little more with Deshaun Watson in the second half, running for some first downs and getting out of trouble. Well, Marcus Mariota is pretty damn mobile. So this is clearly one of those overreaction games that I like. Another is, of course, you know, New England. You know, we're going to talk about the New England and Saints game in a minute, but, you know, who would have thought they lost? But they've done okay after some losses as well.
Yeah, no, they certainly have. Let's touch on this Thursday night football game real quickly here. I do want to mention this one because it is going off here tonight. Cincinnati up to a 7 or 6 point favorite. There were some 6.5s that popped a little bit earlier here today. Those are all off the board. I know some people probably bought that one up to 7, looking for the expectation of a low scoring game. And I certainly can't blame them for that. What do you think about this one? I mean, you've got Houston, inexperienced quarterback, short week. Cincinnati in what should be a bounce back spot playing a defense that isn't Baltimore's. How are you looking at this one?
Well, you know, this is a game that was 3 points as well to open. So some huge line moves. I am actually going Joe Public on this, and I am going to go under the total. You know, Deshaun Watson was banged up. He's not 100%. So you take away some mobility there. And Cincinnati's offense, you know, while Baltimore has a very good defense and played very well, Cincinnati offense has their issues. They're missing a few guys still with injuries. You're now looking at two 0-1 teams meeting up, not wanting to make mistakes on national TV. And 38, again, is a number that seems low after the high numbers in week one, but 38 still giving us value in this play. If this game were later in the year and the two offenses were playing like they did early, you know, you'd be in the 36.5 range. So It's a game that I'm going to look to take the under, and it's a game where I was on both of these teams last week, obviously lost both of them, so I'll wait to see what happens as far as the side goes.
Here's a question for you. So this number was Cincinnati minus 3.5 early in the week. It got up to Houston plus 6.5 at some shops here today, and Bovada is actually still sitting there. How do you feel about buying half points, buying a 3.5 down to 3, a 6.5 up to 7? How do you feel about that in the NFL?
Well, you know, in the NFL, if you can buy down to 3, it would be the only time I do, especially in when you have a game, a total in the 30s. You know, buying a 3 doesn't mean to me as much to me if the games are in the high 40s. You got to look at a percentage of the numbers. So buying 3, if you can, you used to not be able to buy onto 3 in a lot of places. In some places, you still can't. But if you can, it would be the only number I would say to buy into. In college football now, it's not as important. And let me make one statement. 3 is much less important now with the extra points moved back. 3 hits, I believe it's 22% less than it used to 4 or 5 years ago with the sample size because of the missed extra points now. So, again, a low, very low scoring game, I would suggest it. Other than that, it's not. If you're paying 10% every time you want to buy a number, put that money in a jar. Wait to the end of the year. Look how many games you lost. Look how much money you have in the jar. And I'm sure there's going to be more money in the jar than situations where you would have pushed that game.
All right. I know you want to talk about that New England, New Orleans game. Let's go ahead and talk about that. New England, 6, 6.5, 7-point favorite. It all depends on where you look. The more public shops sitting at 7, the sharper shops sitting at 6. Rolf, your thoughts.
Well, you know, first off, you have to mention New England off a loss. And they are now 17-3 against the spread when Brady and Belichick lose a game as a favorite. So right there it says, should we take New England? Well, yes. The angles say to take New England. I'm not going to jump on that so fast. I look at the flip side, and New Orleans is a tough place to play, and New Orleans has one of the best home-road dichotomies. I mean, Drew Brees at home is far different than Drew Brees on the road. I would say, off the top of my head, the teams that I would play at home and not play on the road are New Orleans and Washington. The Redskins' offense at home is incredible. The Redskins' offense on the road is atrocious under Cousins. So the same thing holds true with the Saints. Saints are 4-0 as a home dog the last 4 years. It doesn't happen very often. You know, you're both off a loss. Saints have the obvious negative situation of New England being off a Thursday game where the Saints are off a Monday. That's a rare NFL three-day difference. It doesn't occur often. But the Saints are a team that I think are going to improve quite a bit. They start 3 rookies on their defensive side, and basically they start a 4th rookie because they have one guy who missed the last 2 years who only has 3 games under his belt. Both cornerbacks are very young players. You're going to see a lot of improvement from the Saints. They're not as bad as they were against Minnesota. Safeties missed a lot of plays and a lot of coverage gaffes against the Vikings. Those will be corrected. Again, it's tough to do it against Brady. But I'm also leery about laying 7 on New England because the offense is not the Patriots' offense. Missing Edelman in the middle changes their offense. You saw that Brady kept trying to throw deep. You talked earlier against with Brad how bad of a percentage he had. Well, that's because the middle was not open because you don't have Edelman running. And with no passes in the middle in that 10-yard zone, the corners and safeties are playing deep. Therefore, you cannot complete the deep pass, and Brady struggled in that situation. So, again, I am not going to jump on this on the Patriots bandwagon despite being off a loss because the line is so inflated. The Saints at home as a home dog are the way I would lean in this game.
All right, another game that I want to touch on here, Minnesota and Pittsburgh. We just saw Minnesota. Everybody just saw Minnesota on Monday Night Football there against the aforementioned New Orleans Saints. Sam Bradford looked really good. They put up some good offensive numbers. New Orleans did move the football, but they didn't do anything in the red zone. They were 1-for-5 in red zone trips. Sean Payton apparently likes to score by 3s instead of 7s, which is a big part of the reason why New Orleans lost and failed to cover that game. So Minnesota opens 6, 6.5 out there at Pittsburgh. Seeing Vikings money come in here now in the middle of the week, Your thoughts on that line move and your breakdown of the game?
Well, you know what? Brian Leonard, Preston the sports cheat, and I went to lunch yesterday. And that Pittsburgh game was starting to move down, saw some 5.5s and 5. And Preston said, why is the Pittsburgh game moving? Look at Brian, look at Preston. Marco D'Angelo was also with us. And the four of us collectively said, we don't know. It's a game we all like Pittsburgh. Clearly, there's times that I can't tell you why the line's moving. Obviously, perhaps people are infatuated with Minnesota. Perhaps they saw that Pittsburgh didn't cover at Cleveland and needed to block punt to score, else they would have gotten outscored. But I'll tell you what, Pittsburgh doesn't respect Cleveland. You know, they may be their rival. They may be a division foe, but the Steelers used to blow out Cleveland all the time. Now they just come in, play their game, get out of town with a win, and don't worry about it. I'm on the Steelers. I don't have a reason to tell you why, you know, except for last week's eye test results. But I'll tell you what about Pittsburgh is that I know Le'Veon Bell is a running back. He's a very unique running back that waits for the holes to open, which takes a lot of timing. So for him not playing in the preseason and not being there, his first week's results do not shock me. He's a guy that sits back there, waits for the offensive line, gets his timing down, goes in those holes much later than every other running back. And I think you're going to see a whole different offense week two as he gets his timing down and the offensive line and he gel together.
No, that's a really good point. And it's also kind of rare to see money coming in on a team that's playing on a short week. You know, I mean, we're still waiting for these players to get into a full rhythm, get into their full routines. I mean, you know, you don't get that game week routine when you're going through preseason games. You're playing on a Thursday, you're playing on a Friday, you're playing on a Thursday again, you're playing on a Sunday, you're playing on a Saturday. You know, in the preseason, you can't get into that routine. And those routines are so important for these professional athletes. I talk about that all the time when I do situational handicapping for the NBA and the NHL. You know, these guys have routines. They do things the same way day after day, week after week, and you don't get that in the preseason. Now for Minnesota, you're traveling on a short week after Monday Night Football. You win your home opener in your second-year stadium. It's great. It's awesome. It's all well and good. I mean, Pittsburgh is a Super Bowl contender, and people were talking about that before the season. I believe I could be wrong, and I apologize if I am. Correct me if I'm wrong. I think you liked Pittsburgh to win the Super Bowl when I asked you this question in the preseason.
I had Cincinnati as my surprise team. I have Pittsburgh and Cincinnati as the two teams I played just because I wasn't going to lay the odds with New England. So in the AFC, I do like both Pittsburgh and Cincinnati.
All right, one more game I want to hit on here with you, and we'll let you go for the week and wrap things up here for this Thursday show. Buffalo and Carolina. You know, Buffalo did not play all that well last week against the Jets. Let the Jets hang around. If Todd Bowles doesn't chase points, the Jets cover in this game. Now they take on Carolina. Carolina went out on the road to San Francisco. Not an ideal week one spot, but they didn't really have too many problems with the San Francisco 49ers. So Carolina is now a 7-point favorite back home in Charlotte. 7.5 has popped at Pinnacle as well. What are your thoughts on this one?
You know, I'm not one to lay over 7 in a lot of situations, but I think Carolina is the side. You know, one advantage you have is if you're going to play a West Coast team or you're a West Coast team going east, if you're playing week one, again, you don't have that same disadvantage. You're going out at your leisure. You had 14 days since your starters played. The long trip is, you know, let's be honest, you're going from Charlotte to San Francisco on a charter jet that's taking you 4.5 hours. What's really the difference being on a jet for 4.5 hours than it is 3.5 hours if you're going to say, let's play Houston? So, you know, going east to west week one is no effect on me. You know, you do have Buffalo head coach McDermott going back. He was the DC at Carolina. Well, that's lovely. You know, they're gonna hug at halftime, but it doesn't mean anything else in the NFL. If you're a superior team and you're a head coach who got fired by a program for reasons you don't believe you should, maybe you might run up the score. But when you're in the inferior team going to face an opponent, having been a previous DC just means that you may know Cam Newton pretty good from practices, but Cam Newton also knows your tendencies very well on that side. You know, Buffalo is a team that traded wide receiver Watkins and cornerback Darby just on August 11th because their program wasn't going the way they wanted to, and they jettisoned two starters, two popular starters, and brought in new people to fill those slots. So it's a game where, you know, Carolina is a team that was close to getting the Super Bowl 2 years ago, had a down season. I'm on them certainly early in the year. And Carolina only did enough to have to win against San Francisco. They still looked very good doing it. Cam Newton didn't even have to run the ball. He just sat in the pocket, didn't worry about having to scramble, take off, hurt himself at all. I like Carolina here.
Excellent insight on today's show from Ralph Michaels from WagerTalk.com. Ralph, what's going on over at the website right now?
You know what? We're doing the Gridiron Guide. It's up Sunday, folks. So if you want to take a look at next week's games early, go to WagerTalk.com. Go to the NFL News and find the Gridiron Guide. It's a matchup of all of next week's games. If you want to look at this past week's, it's up there as well. It's got ATS and over-under charts, game logs with yardage, turnovers, quarter-by-quarter scoring to see if you had any fluky wins or losses. And also, not many people looked at it this week. It's still early, but I do a weekly stat analysis which compares teams' strength of schedule, their yards per game and points per game diff, as well as their yards per play. So it gives you an idea when you're comparing teams. Well, you know, you look at a team like Air Force, there's 130 teams in the FBS. Air Force right now has played the 230th schedule. I also include the FCS teams in my strength of schedule so you could see just how bad they are. So Air Force has played one FCS team, and that's all. So when you're looking, you're comparing strength of schedule and yards per game, it gives you a very good sample size. And some of these teams that win 62-0, if they're playing a weak foe, it hurts them in the ratings a little bit. So comparing apples to apples, that guide is up on Mondays as well. Wager Talk, College Football News. And again, I think I said the NFL with the Gridiron Guide. That's actually a college football weekly guide.
And you can follow Ralph on Twitter at CalSportsLV. Ralph, thank you so much, man. Really great show. We'll talk to you again next week.
Thanks, Adam. Talk to you next Thursday.
Strong stuff there from Ralph Michaels. Really, really good show here today. I know we ran about an hour and a half like I projected that we would, but man, I'll tell you what, some next level, very important analysis. Great game breakdowns here with Brad Powers and Ralph Michaels. Coming up on our Friday edition of Bang the Book Radio, Westgate Super Contest Selection segment with myself and Sports Cheetah. My Bang the Book podcast entry, just 1-4 last week. A lot of people did bad, less than 40% in the Super Contest as a whole. But we'll try to get back on the horse here and pick some winners this week. And then also Brent from DSI Sportsbook with this week's version of the odds report. That'll do it for me. Thank you so much for listening, everybody, and I will talk to you again.